According to the materialist, there's no dualism at all there of the kind that Descartes supposed, of substances, of entities, what's sometimes called an ontological dualism. Ontological simply means things, being, rather than a terminological dualism, dualism of words. Those are the two views. They, as you can see, they're radically opposed views. They could hardly be more distinct views than those are. So they divide people very dramatically according to which view they hold. It's quite clear, I think, that dualism is a view nicely tailored towards a religious point of view. If you think of the mind or consciousness in terms of a soul and you have a traditional religious view of the soul as something immaterial and distinct from the body and capable of surviving the extinction of the body, then dualism will be the metaphysics you will favour. If, on the other hand, you have a more scientific outlook, you prefer to think of everything that happens in the world as kind of machine, as just a machine of events going on, its physics covers everything, then materialism will be the view that you will adopt. And so the ideologies of religion, or what might be called scientism, the idea that scientific worldview is the only worldview, those views will recommend either the metaphysics of dualism or the metaphysics of materialism. The trouble with this whole subject is that both of these views, despite their ideological affinities, encounter very serious difficulties, and it's difficult to see how to avoid these problems. So let's go over these difficulties. Dualism. Well, the problem that faces dualism, and it was a problem pointed out to Descartes even in his own time, is usually called the problem of interaction. It goes as follows. The mind interacts with the brain. There's a causal connection between the mind and the brain. So what's going on when, if I decide to take a drink, then my decision causes my action to occur. I decide to do something and I pick up the glass and I have a drink. But correlated with this decision of mine, there's an event in my brain. So the event in my brain is somehow causally connected to the mental action of my decision. So there's a two-way causal connection going on. On the other side, if I'm looking at something and there's an event out there that I see, there's various physical events in my nerves and they culminate in my brain. And as a result of those events in my brain, I will see something. There'll be an event in my consciousness. So the events in my brain cause the events in my consciousness, just as the events in my consciousness, like a decision, will cause events in my brain when my brain causes my body to move in a certain way. So there's a two-way causal interaction between mind and body, and that seems to be very hard to deny that there is such an interaction. The question is, how can Descartes explain it? Because in Descartes' view, these are two radically different substances. One of them is out there in space, just like any other physical substance. One of them isn't even in space. It's not a spatial thing. How does the causal connection work? It certainly can't work by a form of contact between one thing and another. There's no contact between the mind and the brain, according to Descartes' way of looking at things. How could there be? Because the mind isn't the kind of thing which has contact with anything. Contact occurs between things in space, which are spatial substances. But how can the mind possibly have contact with the body, given that it's not an extended spatial substance? Quite generally, how on earth can we give any account of the nature of this causal connection between these radically different substances? There doesn't seem to be any feasible account from science or philosophy or anywhere else of what this kind of causation might involve. So there's a great problem of explaining causal interaction. Some philosophers of the period, Descartes' period in the 17th century, saw the extent of this problem, the acuity of the problem, and decided to maintain that there was no causal connection between the mind and the brain at all. So Leibniz, who we also mentioned before, another 17th century philosopher, held the view that there's no causal connection, but there's what he called a pre-established harmony between the mind and the brain. And where does that pre-established harmony come from? It comes from God. God just sets the universe up so that there is, by a very happy accident, a harmony between my decisions and the way my body moves, and between what's around me and hitting my sense organs and what goes on in my mind. But it's not that what goes on in my brain ever causes what's going on in my mind, or vice versa. God always causes both what goes on in my mind and what goes on in my brain. Those things do not cause each other. That's a very extreme view, and very few people, obviously, of a scientific bent will be happy to accept Leibniz's view, the idea of pre-established harmony. So that's one problem. There's another problem. How can the mind have any causal impact on the body at all, given dualism? Here the problem is this. Suppose we look at the causal ancestry of any particular movement of the body, say an action of doing something. Surely we can give a sufficient explanation of that in terms of events in the nervous system, because the movement of the body is a physical event, and it will have various physical causes. Well, suppose we give that full physical description to explain exactly what's occurring when the body moves. The trouble with that is now there seems to be no room for the mind to be doing any causing. Normally we think when I do something, my intention to do it caused me to do it. But it looks as if, and explained why I did it, but now it looks as if the full explanation of my action can be given in terms of what's going on in the brain. So there doesn't seem to be any role anymore for the mind to be having any causal control over what happens in the body. Well, this leads to a doctrine called epiphenomenalism,